I think it's February 15th today. Is that right? So I'm losing track of time a bit. So we're just about into the middle of our winter retreat here. And thought I'd talk tonight a little bit about distraction. And how to avoid it, how to work with it, what it is. Because as a skill, it's something that I excel at. But the opposite, how to keep ourselves on the right track, interested, collected, calm, and focusing on the stream of Dhamma, you know, the Buddha's teachings, ending our suffering, that's something that is more difficult, but it's really, of course, a much higher skill than being skilled in distraction. And, you know, some of the things that we can aim towards is something like, knowing happiness and peace. I think for myself, one of the highest forms of happiness is knowing that another senior monk is giving the Dhamma talk. So, much mudita to Vajrayanakyo. If you have that same pleasure, I'm not sure. But some of the things that the focus often is on dukkha with our utilizing of the teachings and understanding the teachings, and this is fundamental to the practice. But on the other side of that, we also want to focus on happiness as well, you know, those things that in a wholesome way bring us happiness. But I brought in a quote that I think been helpful to me, and I thought I would read it. And this is from the Zen tradition, although it's basically what just the words of the Buddha, just in a more common vernacular. And there isn't an author of this, as far as I could tell. So it here it is. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. So as I started to talk, it was about distraction, you know, and how easy it is to really get distracted. Just even before the talk started, I skipped over Dhamma, went right to Sangha, and it's just the mind can just in a moment just move into something that there was a moment where there just wasn't attention. And these are innocent mistakes a lot of the time, but it shows, it displays a sense of when, you know, when distraction is there. You know, for me it was a feeling of jumpiness or nervousness, but that's where the mind goes. And when we're focused and calm and clear, then that is often absent for us. We can actually feel quite confident in what we're doing, and we can have a sense of energy in what we're doing. So I don't think for anybody who sat down in meditation at least once that one wouldn't have some very strong relationship to this word distraction. So we look at what it is for a mind to be concentrated, collected, pointed towards a wholesome tendency, a wholesome path, a wholesome object, when we're interested in following our breath. So we know, or whatever object it is, or thinking about the Dhamma, or contemplating. These are things that we can see when our mind is clearly focused. You know, there's the cat again. I've had a lot of cats on my mind the last few weeks, so quite apropos. So anyway, it's just like that. You know, it's just like that cat. You hear it, and it's just sort of a distraction, sort of a funny one at that, but that's where the mind moves. We identify that, and possibly it is much more exciting than this talk. But still, you know, we wanna kind of see, like, well, what is there? Maybe there's some benefit Chinda can give us in speaking, or at least just trying to be contained is helpful as well. But the sense is that when we practice for either a short time or a long time, we will come up with many, many different distractions. And these are incredibly common. And I would say that my understanding of the path at this point is that this is the one thing that takes us away from our interest in the ending of suffering. Even if we are passionate about practicing the Dhamma, we can go the wrong way. We can get distracted in that. You know, there are monks I know who just sometimes they just move into extreme book study, and they just study and learn the entire Pali language, and they start learning Sanskrit, and then these different dialects or other languages. I mean, it just can go on and on. So we have to also be careful, even when we're pursuing Dhammic activities. You know, there can be certain distractions in that realm as well. Sometimes meditation can even, strangely enough, take that on. We might be just meditating in a way that's just not conducive towards helping ourselves. And we're just moving in that way. That's that more sense of, like, really clinging to our own beliefs about what something is. So some teacher might advise us, well, don't do that, do this instead. And we say, no, that's, I'm not going to do that. So we get distracted by our own views and opinions. But much more common is just that tendency towards the Buddhist teaching, like ever seeking fresh delight, now here, now there. That tendency we have, and all of us are likely very aware of this in ourselves, where we move towards that distraction. And even during a winter retreat like this, that can happen. You know, as I mentioned with the cats, that's happening to me right now. I sit down to meditation, and I'm worried about the whatever these neighborhood cats or whatever. And it's in certain ways that's wholesome, but in other ways it's just another distraction. I mean, I think, like, if I died tomorrow, I'd be like, what was I thinking? You know, this kind of concern. And it's just something, though, that we have to deal with in our own practice. And each of us, just think about it on the retreat. What are your distractions? What are you kind of getting pulled into or pulled away from? How is that coming up for you? And to identify that and see, like, well, how can I really work with that? Because we can weather, I mean, especially when it's not during retreat, the world will just create our own, you know, practice for us in a way. Like, if we don't kind of do it for ourselves, if we're not really investing in creating our own Dhammic world, then we will tend towards the worldly ways, and we will go there. And so it's very important to try to bring this up and to see, you know, sometimes it's coming back to the roots of why we actually started this practice to begin with, like to really kind of come to that. Because interestingly enough, it's just we can go away from those roots. We can kind of turn away. Especially as a monastic, I can say one of the things is becoming a monk. You know, becoming a monk, sometimes just taking on duties and doing things becomes the order of the day. And meditation can become a pastime. And so it's important that is not the case, or we change direction, or we identify our distractions, or even if they're not something like meditation becoming a pastime, it's more a sense of how do I really identify where I move, where my mind tends to kind of jump and take on something and say, okay, this is right, I'm going to do this now. You know, it might be just when we have responsibilities, that's a very, very easy gateway for us to move into. Like, I'm just going to be responsible for this and that, and then I have to do this, I have to do that, and then we move in to this compulsive pathway of doing. So it's incredibly important to remember this and to kind of bring it up for ourselves. One of the pathways that we can try to remember for ourselves is sangwega, you know, that sense of spiritual urgency, that real gut feeling in the futility of really following the ways of the world, following the ways of passion and desire, or getting caught up in views and or politics or whatever it is. We kind of just feel disgusted eventually by this, and that is where even if there is a sense of that kind of disgust or that kind of sense this isn't going to go anywhere, it's so futile, we then wake up from that, like, well, what can I do? And the Buddha calls this a search. And so we put ourselves on the way of searching for a way out of this, and of course the way out is the way in. It's not to get away from, it's to go towards, but not the ways of the world, but towards our understanding of our own inner experience and how we are indeed causing ourselves all of the suffering, the mental anguish. We're not always, of course, causing ourselves things that occur to us that aren't under our control. You know, there can be great abuse occurring for people, or we can find ourselves in very difficult situations. And it's not always, the Buddha definitely said, it's not always based on karma. He gave a few reasons why things occur for us. He said, and he talks about the experience of feeling. And he said, it's not always based on karma. And so, but the things that we can do something about, that is where we are responsible, and we can actually make so much use of the Buddha's teachings. It's like a person who has no tools and then is given this tool belt, and we're like, wow, okay. And then we're also taught how to use the tools. And sometimes we fail, you know, we hold a screwdriver by the wrong end, and we're applying the handle instead of the screw, and we say, oh, okay, I get it now. And then we see how to use it. And then we realize, okay, there's different heads. There's a Phillips head, flat head, there's square heads, there's octagonals, there's, I forgot all the different numbers and whatever. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's just the point is we get to know these things and we start to learn, like, what is helpful for us in particular situations and also what is helpful for us for our particular propensities. You know, where do we get ourselves in trouble and how do we utilize these tools for ourselves? But it comes from this sense of spiritual urgency. And if we don't have that, we gotta look. We gotta figure that out for ourselves. Because if it's not there, then we can drift for quite a long time. We can really kind of just say, oh, well, you know, this was giving me some help this time, but now I'm not really that interested. And, you know, and then we forget how even the things that we distract ourselves with, how those are filled with suffering as well. Those are filled with a sense of eventually being discontent. Just in the other reading the other day, Lumbar Chow was talking about buying a camera and then getting excited about that, and then just he didn't even talk about the waning of interest. He just said, "Well, the camera's going to break," and then how excited are you about it at that point? It's already got that within it. Ajñānika has a cup that says this cup is already broken, and it will be a miracle if it survives that and doesn't break. But it has within it any quality that we have, any kind of thing that we desire or attach. It's already broken. I can tell you putting any kind of refuge into cats is definitely a broken refuge. It's not going to work out. And so we do want to look at that clearly as well. What are we taking refuge in? And I remember Lumbar Pasno talking about this. I'm sure he's not the first one to say it, but it's often technology, cell phones, distraction, internet. These are our modes of what we take refuge in. And essentially, it's sensuality. And so we have to break ourselves of that habit of seeking out sensuality, and that is incredibly difficult. That's the path that we're following. And no matter how much we might lend ourselves to that, it keeps coming up. We have to deal with it every day when we're taking food, when we're eating food, when we're making food, when we're dealing with people. I mean, all kinds of things in the monastery. It's just like, I want it to be this way. I don't want it to be that way. And as much as we invest in, like, my refuge is getting the things I want my way, and then I'll be happy, we're going to suffer. And we can convince ourselves, just like in this this recitation here, not creating and clinging to beliefs. We can convince ourselves of these beliefs. If I do it this way, or I have what I want, then I'm going to be happy. And then we motivate ourselves in that way, and we push ourselves into a corner where we can't be happy in other circumstances. And so then we have to find some other place we'll be happy. And then we keep going around, as Lumbar Cha again was talking about, just keeping, it's like keeping some sort of excrement with you. And you just keep thinking that it's smelling wherever you go. And so you keep moving around, wondering when you're going to get rid of this excrement. So we're making choices, and a lot of this has to do with balancing out this sense of urgency. It would be an interesting religion if the Buddha had said, like, get really worked up about how terrible things are in the world, and just once you get that insight, you really see how bad it is, and there is suffering, and just panic. Just absolutely freak out and panic. Just scream and yell, and you'll be fine. And that's his teaching. So that doesn't work out. It wouldn't work as a religion, obviously. But what he says is instead, like, okay, let me teach you something. It's not just that there is this futility in the worldly ways, in pursuing sensuality, in pursuing becoming, this compulsive attitude, or just wanting to annihilate yourself. There is another path. There's another way out. And we have to see that, and we have to work with it, and we have to create that in ourselves to look and open up that window, open up that door, so we can have an interest and take an interest. And we have to keep reminding ourselves around our roots, around the Sangvega, around our sense of that there is suffering, that we are engaged in that. Even when we're experiencing pleasure through the senses, we're still engaged in suffering, when that is our refuge. And so, the balancing of Sangvega is pasada, that sort of tranquility, calm, but a confidence as well. And so it's the opposite of this panic. It's seeing clearly. It's gaining insight. And so in order to do that, we have to have also a sense of virya. We have to have a sense of energy. And that means we do have to bring up this sense of interest for ourselves. And that's not easy, because the old baggage of sensuality follows us around wherever we go. It says, no, this will make you happy if you enjoy this sight. You know, watch this YouTube video, or go out to this nice restaurant, or get whatever it is you want. You can have it. The world is your oyster. And so we believe in that, and then we mistrust it at the same time. And then we see over and over again, oh no, this keeps causing me suffering. I keep going towards this, and it keeps causing me suffering. And so it's not just that we get one blast of Sangwega and then we're done. Maybe there's some people like that, but I would guess that they're pretty rare. So we have to keep renewing this over and over again for ourselves. We have to keep investing our interest into the Dhamma. And again, this is not an easy task. I think when I was first meditating and really catching a fire around meditation, I just thought like, oh yeah, this is the path, I'm going to become a monk. So I became a monk. And it's just like, there are peaks and valleys. It's not just peak after peak after peak, and we have to deal with the valleys, and we have to deal with the peaks as well, because sometimes they're there and they can be very convincing, like, oh, this is what it's all about, and I'm going to stay at this level, and nope. That's not usually how it works. It's like a stock, right? A stock index or something, sorry, where you see like the stock is going up and down, up and down, up and down. But hopefully, like, if it's a good stock, then it just has a tendency to be progressing upwards. And that's really what we want to see. We don't have to kind of like, oh, it's so terrible now, and I don't know if I can continue, and oh my gosh, it's so great. And we just want to really know that that's completely part of the path, that we're going to go through droughts, we're going to go through problems and difficulties, and we're also going to have times when we feel very confident and happy, hopefully. And we have to learn to deal with that. And so using that particular word that I just said, learning, is very important, because if that's our emphasis, then when we're having a difficult time, then we're still learning. This is how I deal with a difficult experience. And we keep putting effort into that. We keep saying like, oh, okay, so, you know, this is a problem. This is something that I can kind of work with, or I can try to figure out. I can try to understand, what are the Buddha's tools? What is he teaching us? And so we learn to deal with these things through our own patience, our own kanti. And we keep working with them. So right now in the middle of the retreat, this might require some kanti for us. Our practice might be in a different place in our own minds than we had wanted to be, you know, at this point. Or we might be experiencing a lot of happiness and pleasure from the practice. And then we have to also be careful about that. I have to make sure that this just keeps going on and on and on like this. I don't want to be unhappy again. But it doesn't work that way. We learn from this happiness. We learn from our own experiences of a calm mind, of a centered mind. And we point that mind, and we utilize it, and we understand the Dhamma more clearly. We see that the again, Lumbur Cha in his reading just said it's very simple when you just focus on something like impermanence. You just keep seeing that over and over again in your practice. It doesn't have to be such a complex thing. And you gain insight in that way. And so when the happiness drops out, if you have insight into impermanence, it's, oh yeah, that's right. That was always going to happen. Or you break through some sort of depression or melancholy or just a feeling of blah, nothing's going on. It's all right, that's impermanence. This too will change. And so a retreat like this really gives us an opportunity to see that. One of the great dangers of a retreat can be a tendency where it's like, I'm gonna get this, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna have all these special practices, and my mind is gonna get so collected and clear, and I'm gonna feel really peaceful, and I think like by the end of it, then I'm just gonna continue that on. I'm just gonna have like I'm just gonna be in retreat mind for the rest of my life, because this retreat is gonna be it. And it's a real danger, because we can kind of move, we can have that attitude, even if it's not very clear to us, it can be something pushing us from behind. So we're emphasizing progress around, like, again, it's almost a sense of sensuality, like becoming great, becoming, getting the tranquility, or getting this or that. We're stuck in desire again. One of the great killers of practice can be having an exalted experience in meditation. I say, oh, I gotta get that again. And then it doesn't happen. It could be many years. Just because of that feeling of getting. So we're also trying to really be careful about when our minds move away from distraction, it moves towards contraction. We can contract it in our practice. And we don't see it. We don't see that we're putting blinders on, and we're really just pushing ourselves in a direction that isn't so helpful. But over and over again, we really can find something very useful in our practice, and that is that it's always up to us. And in a way, that can feel like a lot of weight that we put on our shoulders, but it can also feel quite liberating, because you said, oh, okay, I'm responsible for this, but that also means I can do something about it. I can change those things that aren't working for me. I can move in a different direction. I don't have to use something that over and over is not necessarily telling me that I'm doing something incorrectly. I can try to change. Sometimes people change their object of meditation. They've been doing the same thing for years, and they're just they're hitting a nail with a hammer, and then they realize, oh, it's a screw. I didn't know that for so long. So we then move into things that might be a bit uncomfortable. Some new practice for us. Some people have never tried, something like Maranasati, contemplation of death, or a Asubha practice, contemplation of the unbeautiful. Others, it might be just the opposite, like, I'm never going to do metta. It's not for me. I hate metta. And so we might try something that's out of our comfort zone. And this time in the retreat, it's very helpful for us. It's very helpful to try this, try different things, and see where it takes us. But we also should be aware not to just kind of do that out of a sense of restlessness. Every few days I'm just going to keep changing it around, because then that might be either restlessness or doubt. I don't think I'm doing it right. I should do this instead. So we have to learn, basically, our skill through a long period of practice is to learn what's appropriate for ourselves. And our teachers can help us, can help guide us in that way, but it's also up to us to look and see for ourselves what's useful right now. And so as I began the talk, what we want to look at first and foremost is, what are the ways that we're distracting ourselves? What are the ways that we're pulling ourselves away from what is beneficial for us? And often that is, in a way, following some sort of tendency we have towards kind of like, well, I'm going to probably get more pleasure doing this, doing these things in a compulsive way, this responsibility I have. you know, or just all the many little ways, as I've been talking about, we seek out pleasure, sensuality, or just our thoughts, even if it's just not engaging the physical world, just thoughts around our sensual world. And sometimes it might feel like, a freighter out in the ocean, or it's moving, but it's very hard to turn. Or like a locomotive slowing down. It just takes so long to slow down. But it does slow down, and freighters do change direction. It just might take a fair amount of effort. And so we want to encourage ourselves not to be afraid of that effort, not to be afraid of bringing up energy, and pushing ourselves a little in a wholesome way, encouraging ourselves where we might say, I'd rather not bother. And we kind of say, I'm not sure if that voice is good to listen to. I could do a little bit more here. So I'll just end with this recitation again. And we'll see if you can bring this in a bit in your own practice, and utilize this time, the middle of the retreat, as a time to bring about some of the ways that the mind might be getting distracted or moving in a direction that's not so helpful, and to recalibrate, because it's a very helpful time. As Lumpur Cha said, you know, when you're doing walking meditation, he said you walk, and as you turn around the end of your walking path, you recollect, okay, it's a level of mindfulness, is there mindfulness? You bring mindfulness up to the fore again. And then in the middle of the path, you do the same thing. And at the end, you do it again. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. So I'll leave that this evening.